States little time to prepare its response. Soviet bombers would take 8 or 9 hours to reach the most important American targets. Soviet missiles could hit them in 30 minutes or less. Early warning of a ballistic missile attack would be necessary to protect the nation's leadership and ensure that SAC's retaliatory force could get off the ground. That sort of warning, however, might never come. The Dewline radars had been designed to track enemy aircraft, not missiles, and the Pentagon had no means of detecting ICBMs once they'd been launched. After Sputnik, the Air Force gained swift approval to construct the Ballistic Missile Early Warning System, BMUs, three huge radars that would spot Soviet missiles heading toward the United States. One of the radars would be built at Thule Air Base, Greenland, another at Clear Air Force Base, Alaska, and the third in the North Yorkshire Moors, England. Until the BMUs was completed, however, the first sign of a Soviet missile attack would probably be mushroom clouds rising above SAC bases and American cities. Work immediately began on a bomb alarm system that would instantly let the president know when cities and air bases were being destroyed. Hundreds of small, innocuous-looking metal canisters were placed atop buildings and telegraph poles throughout the United States. Optical sensors inside the canisters, according to a classified account of the system, would detect the characteristic flash of a nuclear explosion, locate precise blast locations, and indicate the intensity and pattern of the attack. At SAC headquarters, green lights dotting a map of the United States would turn red to display each nuclear detonation. The amount of warning time that the bomb alarm system could provide was far from ideal, especially if the Soviets managed to synchronize their missile launches so that all the warheads landed at once, but it seemed better than nothing. General LeMay had been concerned for years about the threat that missiles could pose to the Strategic Air Command. In 1956, SAC had begun to test a plan that would keep some of its bombers constantly on alert and get them airborne half an hour after being warned of an attack. The logistics of such a ground alert were daunting. Crews would need to sleep near the runways and run for their planes the moment that a klaxon sounded. Bombers would be parked fully loaded with nuclear weapons and fuel. The planes were said to be cocked like the hammer of a pistol. Tankers for aerial refueling would be loaded as well and prepared for takeoff. By the fall of 1957, ground alerts had become routine at SAC bases in the United States, Great Britain, and Morocco, and the Strategic Air Command hoped that within a year, at least one-third of its bombers would always be parked beside runways, ready to get off the ground within 15 minutes. The successful launch of the two Sputniks created the possibility that, during a missile attack, SAC might not have 15 minutes to launch the ground alert planes. LeMay had recently been promoted to serve as the Vice Chief of Staff at the Air Force, and his replacement at SAC, General Thomas S. Power, pushed hard for approval of an even bolder tactic, the airborne alert. Power was widely considered, among fellow officers at SAC, to be a mean son of a bitch. Born in New York City and raised in Great Neck, Long Island, he dropped out of high school, worked in construction, returned to high school at the age of 20, earned a degree, and joined the Army Air Corps in 1928. He later flew the lead plane during the firebombing of Tokyo and served as vice commander at SAC. He often played the role of LeMay's hatchet man, firing people, enforcing discipline, and making sure that orders were carried out. The two men shared a strategic outlook, but had different management styles. LeMay expressed disapproval with a stony silence or a few carefully chosen words. Power yelled and swore at subordinates. The warmth behind LeMay's gruff exterior, the intense devotion to the well-being of his men, was harder to find in his successor. Even LeMay admitted that Power was a sadist, sort of an autocratic bastard, and yet he got things done. Kindness, sensitivity, and a genial disposition were not essential traits for a commander planning to win a nuclear war. The basic premise of SAC's airborne alert was hard to refute. Planes that were already in the air wouldn't be destroyed by missiles that hit bases on the ground. Keeping a portion of the bomber fleet airborne at all times would allow the United States to retaliate after a surprise attack. During an airborne alert, American bombers would take off and fly within striking distance of the Soviet Union. If the planes failed to receive a go code, they'd turn around at a prearranged spot, circle for hours, and then return to their bases. The plan erred on the side of safety. A breakdown in communications between SAC headquarters and one of the bombers would end its mission without any bombs being dropped. The mission would fail-safe, an engineering term for components designed to break without causing harm. The fail-safe measures of an airborne alert could reduce the effectiveness of SAC's nuclear retaliation once America was at war. Bombers that didn't receive a go code would circle and then return home, leaving their targets untouched. But the alternative, an airborne alert in which crews were ordered to fly to the Soviet Union and bomb it unless they received some sort of don't go code from headquarters, could easily start a war by mistake. That sort of mission was bound, at some point, to fail deadly. Day and night, I have a certain percentage of my command in the air, General Power told the press the week after the second Sputnik launch. These planes are bombed up, and they don't carry bows and arrows. The message to the Soviet Union was unmistakable. SAC's ability to retaliate wouldn't be diminished by intercontinental ballistic missiles. But Power was bluffing. The airborne alert existed only on paper, and the United States didn't keep bombers in the air day and night, ready to strike. Carrying nuclear weapons over populated areas was still considered too dangerous. Designers at the weapons labs had been surprised to hear about SAC's ground alert. Aside from the occasional training exercise, the Atomic Energy Commission had always assumed that hydrogen bombs and atomic bombs would be safely locked away in igloos until the nation was at war. The idea of parking bombers near